Okay, Boker Tov. Good morning. So first of all, thank you to all of you for coming, and to Torah in Motion, because they put on wonderful programs. I thought of this class in honor of two occasions. This week is Yom Yerushalayim, which sort of reminds me of Har HaMoriah, the idea of Jerusalem, the Temple Mount. And then we obviously have Shavuot on the horizon, and we're talking about the giving of the Torah and the Mount Sinai. And I don't know if we actually see these places as very distinct. Of course, Mount Sinai out in the desert, in the middle of nowhere, we don't even quite know where it is. We have no, I know there is some sort of Christian identification for one of the places, but nobody really knows where Har Sinai is. And on the other hand, who doesn't know where Har HaMoriah is, or who doesn't know where the Temple Mount is? It's in the newspaper every other day. So it's a place where Jews want to return to. And so that maybe you could argue that there is a huge difference between the two places of Har Sinai and Har HaMoriah. And yet, in the Midrashic imagination, there are many, many places where the two are identified as one, are put together. And I wanted to study with you today a few different Midrashim, which seem to make a connection between these two places. And we're going to see that it's not only in the Midrash, but it's even earlier in the Torah itself, that there seems to be some sort of interesting intertextual connection between them, and hopefully that will give us room to think about how to relate to these two places and see whether there really is a connection. Let me try and begin introducing the topic maybe with the way that I stumbled upon this topic. And I'm going back a few years when I had my boy, who is now 14-year-old, was much younger, and he was kicking a ball around outside our house. Now, I live in a little yeshuv, a little town somewhere south of Yerushalayim in Gush Etzion, and we live opposite the shul in our yeshuv. Now, they built the shul at the top of the hill because the halakha says that a synagogue should be built at the top of a hill. My son was kicking around a football outside our house one day, and he said, "Abba, it's really interesting. If I kick the ball down the street that way, it rolls down the hill. If I kick the ball that way, it rolls down the hill. If I kick the ball that way, it rolls down the hill." So I said, "You're bright, we live at the top of the hill. That's why it always rolls down." I said, "And you know what's at the top of the hill? It's the shul. And you know why the shul is at the top of the hill? Because the Bet Mikdash was at the top of the hill. The temple, the Bet Mikdash." So my son said to me, "But Abba, the Bet Mikdash was not at the top of the hill." I said to him, No, you must be wrong. The Bet Mikdash was surely at the top of the hill." And he said, "But Abba, why is it that whenever we go to the Kotel, we walk down steps, we don't walk up steps?" So this was one of those great parenting moments where I suddenly thought, well, that is interesting. When we walk, I don't know how many of you have visited Jerusalem recently, but if you walk through the Jewish quarter of Jerusalem, you stand over there and you're actually overlooking the Temple Mount. You're higher than the Temple Mount. And you go down steps and you find yourself at the Kotel. So what's going on there? And when you come to think about it, and it started getting me thinking about, now by the way, in case you're worried about the answer to this question, I actually came up with one of those very quick parenting moment answers. And I said, "Oh, well, you see, the Jews used to live in the city of David, and the city of David was down the hill. And they'd walk up the city of David, and at the top of the hill was the temple." And that's really true. But again, and I don't know how well, you know, Jerusalem, in my mind, since I live pretty close to Jerusalem, I sort of hang out there. Jerusalem's pretty, the geography of the city is pretty, I can see it in front of my head. But I imagine that for those of you who have visited, you're probably aware you have the Temple Mount. And when you're in the old city of Jerusalem or the Jewish quarter, you do look down on the Temple Mount. It is still, though, a hill. In other words, if you're standing at the Kotel, you're standing at the Western Wall, and in ancient times, the floor level at the Western Wall was much lower. It's been filled with rubble of destruction of ages. The floor level was about 3 or 4 meters lower, but even then, the floor level of the Temple Mount is about 3 or 4 stories above your head. In other words, there is a little hill there. And What's interesting about it is we have a phrase in Tehillim, Yerushalayim harim savivla v'Hashem savivla amo. Yerushalayim has hills surrounding it, and Hashem is around his people. There are many huge hills which surround Jerusalem. There is Mount Scopus, Har HaTzofim, the Mount of Olives, Har HaZeitim, the mountain of the Old City, where the Jewish quarter is, which we call Har Tzion. It's not in the Bible, it's not called Har Tzion, but we don't need to go there right now. All the hills around Jerusalem, it's as if there are large hills and a small little, modest little hill in the middle. And that's what Jerusalem looks like, a small hill surrounded by many large hills. And the smallest of those hills, a little hillock, so to speak, is actually the Temple Mount. Now the reason why I'm mentioning that is because that reminded me of a midrash that I heard, and I didn't know it was a midrash, I just knew it as a sort of a folklore fable that I heard in kindergarten. And you probably learned it in kindergarten too. You all probably heard the story, and you know, you came home with it as a child, or your children came home with it, that when God wanted to give the Torah to the Jewish people, all the hills started fighting, and one said, "Give it on me, I'm the highest." And the other one said, "Give it on me, I'm the strongest." And one said, "Give it on me, I'm the prettiest." And there was one little modest, quiet mountain who didn't make a fuss of himself and just stood there quietly. And God says, "Wow, you're so modest, you're so self-effacing, I'll give the Torah on you." Right? Have you heard that midrash? Now, I started becoming convinced, even before I read the text, that actually this midrash, see, we don't know where Sinai is. The people who wrote the midrash didn't know where Sinai was. We don't know. Who could have made up such a midrash? I'm convinced, and I'll try and prove it a little bit, that midrash is actually not about Mount Sinai, but is actually about the Temple Mount itself. Because it's strange that the Temple Mount should be such a small, it was the most unpresuming mountain, the most unlikely mountain to build your temple on. Why build the temple on a small hill surrounded by big hills? And what they did was, in some way, they identified the topography of Jerusalem with the story of Sinai. Let's see if we can see this actually in the text itself. And let's read a little bit. And we'll try and analyze some of the... The Midrash, we'll start with the Midrash Tanchuma on Vayera, which is on the parsha of the Akedah, the sacrifice or not sacrifice of Yitzchak. And it starts off with, and you're welcome to follow on in the English, I put the English here, I hope it'll be useful for some of you. Vayera tamakom erachok. When Abraham is going towards the Akedah, it says he saw the place from afar. Now, I'll be honest, I don't quite understand the question here. It's like a fabricated question, but V'heach nir'ah me'rachok. How was it seen from afar? By the way, does anybody remember what Rashi says? How did he identify the mountain? Do you remember what Rashi says? Rashi says he identified the mountain because there was a cloud. Anan kashur lahar. There was a cloud on the mountain. That's interesting because the other mountain where we know there was a cloud is Har Sinai, where it says, and Moshe went into the cloud and the cloud covered him for 7 days and there was thunder and lightning, which is again interesting. Where did Rashi develop, or the Midrash develop, that imagery that there was a cloud above the mountain of Moriah? Okay. The Midrash is going to give a different solution. How was it seen from so far off? I imagine that the Baal HaMidrash knows the topography of Jerusalem and knows that from far off you will not see Har HaMoriah. It's a low mountain and there are bigger mountains surrounding it. You are unlikely to see Har HaMoriah Merachok from far off. Melamei Shemitchila Haya Makom Amok. Originally it was a deep place, a valley. Kevan She'amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lishrot Shechinato Alav. When God wanted to place His Shechinah there. And interestingly enough, this is not with the Akedah. It says, "V'la'asot migdash," to make a sanctuary there. Amar ein derech melech lishkon be'emek. What? A king should live in a valley? Ela b'makom gavoah u'ma'ala u'miufa. No, God should be in a high place, a place of great standing in a beautiful place. V'nireh lakol. Miyad ramat HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Immediately God hinted lisrivot ha'emek, to the surroundings of the valley, sheet kaptsu haharim lemakom echad, that the hills should gather to one place, v'lasot makom shina. In other words, this is a conglomeration of hills. Okay, in other words, all the hills start moving around and form this big hill, which becomes Har HaBayit. Lifichach nikra Har Moriah. That is why it's called Har HaMoriah. Why? Shemiyirato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because from the fear of God, Moriah, according to this, comes from the word Yira, fear. From God's fear, Na'aseh Har, it became a mountain. Here already we have the theme that Har HaMoriah is in some way a product that we have the sense of things going down, things going up, and that Har HaMoriah originally was low and it was raised up. Again, where this, now this theme is, seems to be found also about Har Sinai. And let's just learn the next Midrash and we'll see, this is the famous Midrash that you know. I should add that Midrash Tehillim is a relatively late Midrash, and there are different datings for different Midrashim. And this is based on an earlier Midrash in the Mechilta, which is actually very, very different. In the Mechilta, it's actually very interesting. The Midrash in the Mechilta is based on a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which we'll read in a second, which says, Ki chay aninu um Hashem, l'amelech Hashem tzvakot shmo ki tzavor beharim u'karmel kayam yavo. Bayam yavo. That the Carmel and the Tabor, two big mountains in Israel, came along. And according to the Midrash in the Mechilta, God says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem your God. As if to summons everyone. And Am Yisrael is standing there. And suddenly mountains start arriving and say, what, did you call me? Did you call me? And the Carmel comes along and says, did you call me? the Tabor says, did you call me? And then he says, Ashecho Tzeiticha Meretz Yisrael. And they go, oh, he meant them, not us. Slightly bizarre Midrash. But it's in the Mechilta, a very early Tanaitic Midrash. We're going to see a different impression. What's interesting is there, according to that Midrash, the mountains are feeling that they themselves are being summoned by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Here we'll see a different reading. Midrash Tehillim. Rabbi Natan Omer, Kevan shebikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu litein Torah l'Yisrael. When God wanted to give the Torah to Israel, Ba Carmel me'aspamya. Carmel came from Aspamya, again somewhere in Lebanon, I think. But Tavor mi Beit Elim, again it's strange, why doesn't Carmel come from the Galil and Tavor from the Galil? Whichever way, I'm sure you know Har Carmel, a big mountain near Haifa. Har Tavor, again in the middle of the Galil, a huge impressive mountain. Ze Omer, Nikreti Har Tavor. Oh, sorry, I missed out a line. Zeh shine amar b'kabbalah, this is what we learn in Yirmiyahu. Chai ani, as I live, ne'um ha'melech Hashem tzvakot shemo, ki ketavor beharim, uch ha'charmel bayam yavo. As I live, declares the king, the Lord of hosts, like tabor among the mountains and karmel next to the sea, they all come along. Okay. By the way, we were familiar with the idea of Midrash giving physical things animation. We're also familiar with even the psukim which talk about mountains dancing around, right? We know, B'tzeit Yisrael mi'Mitzrayim, Beit Yaakov mi'am Noez, right? So we talk about the Harim Rakdu Ka'elim. You know, maybe this is a reflection of the notion of the earthquake, it would appear, or the notion of Vayecherad Kol HaHar. If the mountain was quaking, it says in Har Sinai, so you literally feel the mountains are shaking. But for the mountains to be skipping around and changing the location, this is a bit much. But the Midrash doesn't have a problem with that. We'll see even more than that. Zeomer, this one says, Nikreti Har Tavor, I am called Mount Tavor, Alay Na'esh Yitishre Shechina. Why? I am the highest mountain. According to this, the floodwaters did not fall on Mount Tabor. Very interesting tradition. Again, if what's Tabor saying about itself, if it's saying the floodwaters didn't fall on me, What do you think they're saying? What? Right? I'm clean of sin. In other words, I am not implicated in the sin. I wasn't in that dreadful. I was clear of the punishment of the Mabul. I am righteous mountain. Likewise, the Carmel, Zelmer, this one says, Anini kreti hara Carmel. I'm Carmel. Alayna eshet yishre shechina. The shechina should be on me, lefisha ani nitmatseti betoch. Again, very interesting. I put myself in the middle. The middle of what? Va'alai abruet hayam. I don't think you've ever heard this theory before. How did the Israelites cross the Red Sea? Har HaKarmel jumped into the sea, because it's Karmel Bayam Yavo. Right? The Karmel came from the sea. The Karmel might be next to the sea, but it's not in the sea. So the Midrash says, oh, the Karmel is saying, look, how did the Jews cross the Red Sea? Because the Karmel jumped in and they were able to hike across the Karmel and get through the Red Sea. And then I guess it jumped out, or something like that. Anyway, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kfar nifsaltem lefanai begavhut sheyesh bachem. You have disqualified yourself because of your haughtiness. And now, very interestingly, what happens? Hitchilu kol ha'arim mitra'amim u'motatim. All the mountains start mitra'amim. Mitra'amim is like from ra'im, is thunder. Thundering and mitmotatim, collapsing. Okay, why are they collapsing and thundering? What did God say to them? You are disqualified because you are too high, right? So what do the mountains start doing? Trying to cause an avalanche or something, right? Trying to get some, lower some height, okay? Interestingly enough, Amara Kodesh Baruch Hu, Ein Ratzoni Ela B'Sinai, Shu Shafal Mikulchem. I'm only interested in Sinai, which is lower than all of you. Shneimar Maron VeKadosh Eshkon VeDakah U'Shfal Ruach. I might be Maron VeKadosh, but I'm interested in those who are low and lowly of spirit. And now, here's the line. Very interesting. So how do we get such a low mountain? And the assumption is, in the Midbar there aren't any mountains. All the mountains are imported. So where did this mountain come from? The Sinai Mehichan Ba. Where did Sinai come from? Amar Rabbi Yossi. Mount Sinai, if the Carmel could come, you know, jump over, and Tabor could jump over, where did Mount Sinai come from? It came from Har HaMoriah. It was detached like a piece of challah from the dough. It comes from the same dough of Har HaMoriah. They come from the same DNA, put it that way. Makom Shene'akad Yitzchak Avinu. Very interesting. In other words, according to this Midrash Tehillim, literally, Har Sinai is detached from Har HaMoriah. But what are they exactly trying to say here? And I'll say something more. If you remember, what was the Midrash that we just saw about? The Midrash Tanchuma, about Har Sinai. Should Har Sinai be, about Har HaMoriah. Should Har HaMoriah be high or low? According to the first Midrash. Har HaMoriah should be high. And suddenly they're saying, but Har Sinai should be low because it comes from Har HaMoriah. So I don't understand. Is this high or is this low? And anyway, why should there be a connection? You know, suddenly you've got these two mountains which they're describing as very haughty. But I don't understand. Where do they get this idea? We just said that Har Sinai has to be high. Har HaMoriah has to be high. So suddenly how are they creating this low mountain from this very high mountain of Har HaMoriah? It doesn't seem to work. Okay, it's true. So if it's like a challah, like the mitzvah of challah, right, where you have the dough and you take a small amount, it becomes a little mountain. So I guess that's what they're saying. But the qualities seem different. I believe that behind all of this, my feeling in many cases is that Midrash isn't just made up folk tales, and that Midrash frequently has roots in biblical texts. And the rabbis were reading these biblical texts and reading their resonances and the intertextuality between them and understanding what lay behind the text. And so what I'd like to try and do to discover maybe the roots of this very interesting, I mean, again, first of all, where's this idea of talking about high and low with Har HaMoriah, with Har Sinai, where's that idea coming from? And where's this connection begin? So if you turn over the page, I think we'll find some solutions. I know this looks a little bit of a dense page, but we'll try and see what we can do with it. I'm going to have to make an assumption here, especially for our time constraints, that most people know the story, or that all of you know the story of the Akedah. Right? I'm correct. People know the story of the Akedah. We read it every Rosh Hashanah. We know the story of the sacrifice of Isaac, or the non-sacrifice. Less well known is a story in Shemot, chapter 24. It's actually the chapter of Na'aseh v'Nishma, where we make our covenantal ceremony with the Torah. Now, there actually is a discussion amongst the Rishonim, the early commentaries, about whether chapter 24 of Shemot happened before Har Sinai, before God spoke to us on that Shavuot morning and gave us the Torah. And he didn't really give us anything in hand, but he transmitted the Ten Commandments to us in thunder and lightning. Whether chapter 24 is the prelude or the conclusion to that event. But whichever way it is, we see a ceremony where the Jewish people make a covenant with God. A covenant, a treaty with God. Let's quickly read through the details. And maybe I'm already going to say that, give away, I'll cut to the chase. This is going to be a story about Har Sinai, about Matan Torah, maybe even more about Matan Torah, about receiving Torah, about committing ourselves to Torah. And what you're going to see is, it seems quite clear, that the story in Shemot, Perek Chaf Dalet, in Shemot chapter 24, has many intertextual references to Bereshit chapter 22. And there are a whole bunch of phrases which recur in one or the other. We're going to study chapter 24, and we're going to ask ourselves what the stories might have in common. Let's just move ahead and read it. Chapter 24. Well, Moshe Amar, God said to Moshe, Alei al Hashem, Ata v'Aaron Nadav v'Avihu v'Shivim v'Zknei Yisrael v'Yishtachavitem Merachok. There we've got that Merachok word. God said to Moshe, go up to God, you, Aaron, Nadav, and Avihu, and the 70 elders, and bow down from afar. They will bow down from afar. Nigash Moshe levado, but Moshe can go all the way, El Hashem, v'hem lo yigashu. In other words, Aaron, his sons, Nadav, and Avihu, and the 70 elders can't go all the way to the top of Mount Sinai, but they'll stay merachok, but Moshe can go, v'am lo ya'aluimu. Okay, what happens? Vayavo Moshe. Moshe goes down the mountain. V'yisapel amet divrei Hashem. He tells the people the words of God. Et kol hamishpatim. And the people answer. Kol echad beyomru. They answer all together and say. Kol advarim asher diber Hashem na'aseh. Everything you ask us to do, we will do. What happens after this? In other words, the people say, we've heard the Ten Commandments. We've heard the mishpatim. We are happy to accept it. What happens? Verse 4, Pasuk Dalet, Vayichtov Moshe kol divrei Hashem. Moshe writes down all the words of God, Vayishkem baboker, they get up the next morning. Vayiven mizbeach, tachat ahar, they build an altar. Pay attention to these details, getting up early in the morning, building an altar. And there were 12 monuments to the 12 tribes of Israel. Pasuk Hei. Vayishlach et na'arei b'nei Yisrael, he sends the youth of b'nei Yisrael, Vaya'alu olot, Vayizbechuz v'achim shlamim, Lashem parim. The children, the Na'arei B'nei Israel, bring all sorts of sacrifices. So what's he done? He's written down all of the words of the covenant. He's written them in a book. They get up in the morning. They build an altar. They send the young, the Na'arim. They make sacrifices. And now what's going to happen? There's going to be a covenantal ceremony. Pasuk Vav. Vayikach Moshe chatzi hadam. Moshe takes half the blood. Vayasem ba'aganot. He puts it in containers. Half the blood is put on the altar, half the blood he puts in containers, and he takes the book of the covenant, that which he's written down, Pasuk Zayin, and he calls it, he reads it in the ears of the people, and they say, everything that God has said, we will do, and we will listen. By the way, this is contrary to the famous Midrash, that they hadn't heard the Torah before they committed themselves to it. According to this, they had heard a lot of the Torah. They had heard the Dvarim, and they'd heard the Mishpatim. Okay. And what does he do? Moshe takes pasuk chet. Vayikach Moshe et hadam. Moshe takes the blood. Vayizrok al ha'am. He throws it on the people. Vayomer. He says, Hinei dam ha'brit asher karat Hashem imachem et kol hadvarim eila. He throws the blood in the direction of the people. I guess it didn't go on the people. And he says, this is the blood of the covenant. Now God has made a covenant with you. In other words, what's the covenant? A treaty. You are bound to God by contract. You are committed to the Torah, and you have committed yourself by contract to this. Fine. And now, what? You remember, but hold on. In the first lines, it said that Nadav, Avihu, Aharon, Moshe, and the 70 elders were to go and see God. So apparently, after we've made the contract, now they can go and see God. Because look what happens next. Vayal Moshe v'Aharon, Moshe and Aharon, Nadav and Avihu, Shivim Mizikne Israel, Moshe, Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, and the 70 elders went up the mountain. Vayiru et Elohei Israel. This is a very cryptic phrase. They saw the gods of Israel. Vatachat raglav, underneath his feet, kama'ase livnat ha-sapir. I know we can't talk about God's feet, but the Tanakh does. Underneath God's feet was like a sapphire stone, a sapphire brick, levena. And it looked like the very heavens by its purity. And now a strange phrase. In other words, you've got Nadav, Abihu, and the 70 elders seeing some blue sapphire color under God's feet. And to these noblemen of Israel, lo shalach yado, he did not send forth his hand. Usually that is interpreted as he maybe should have, maybe they did something wrong. God should have struck them down, and he did not. Vayochlu vayishtu, and they celebrated. Okay, you understand the storyline? Everybody clear? In the next scene, now Moshe goes up to get the two tablets of stone, and I just want to pay attention to, he's asked to come up, verse 12. If you look at Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayochka Moshe, Moshe got up, Yoshua Mesharato, Vayal Moshe al Har Elokim, they went on the mountain of God, Valaz Kenim Amar, and he said to the elders, Shivu lanu bezeh ad asher nashuv aleichem. Stay here till we return to you. And I'm going to skip again. I'm sorry, I'm rushing a little bit. Pasuk Yud Zayin. What did the mountain look like? Omareh kavod Hashem ke'esh ochelet barosh ahar. The appearance of God was like a consuming fire at the top of the mountain. Many people have noted that there are some interesting connections, or slightly bizarre connections, with the story of Al-Qaeda. Not only the fact that here we have a group of people approaching the mountain, where two people actually go to the top of the mountain, and some people are left at the bottom. Okay, in the case of Al-Qaeda, of course, Abraham and Yitzchak go up the mountain, and the two Na'arim stay below. And the same phrase is used for both of them. If you have a look in the left hand, the Akedah, it says, Vayome Abraham el Na'arav, Shivu lanu poi machamor, Vani vahanan el cha'adkol, Vinishtachavet, Manashuv aleichem. Very interesting. Shivu lachem poi machamor, Vinishtachavet, Vinashuva. What does it say here? Shivu lanu bezeh ad asher nashuv aleichem. Stay here till we come back. Stay here till we come back. Okay? Interesting. In both cases, we have the idea of Vishtachavitem Merachok. We have the idea of Merachok. In both cases, we have the idea of Vayashkeim Baboker, getting up in the morning. In both cases, they build an altar, and they want to bring sacrifices. Maybe one of the most startling connections is this strange word in the Akedah, the Ma'achelet. The Eish and the Ma'achelet. The knife is called a Ma'achelet, an instrument of eating. Okay? Ha'esh ve'et ha-Ma'achelet. And here we have Eish Ochelet at Har Sinai. Eish Ochelet. And maybe I'll deal with two again. There are two further connections which are powerful. Of course, the pinnacle, the peak of the story of the Akedah, if you look in verse 12, Pasuk Yud Bet, there is Vayomer Al Tishlach Yatchal Anar V'Al Taslom Uma. Don't do anything to him. In our story, in Pasuk Perek Chavdalad, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Ve'El Atzilei B'nei Israel Lo Shalach Yado, Lo Shalach Yado Al Tishlach Yado Al Anar. People were meant to be killed, but they were spared. Okay, one last
parallel, even though there are more we'll talk about. In Shemot Chaf Dalet, we see who goes up the mountain, Moshe, Aharon, Nadav, Elihu, Shivim, and Israel. But suddenly there is a mysterious group of people, Na'arei B'nei Israel. All the commentaries comment, who are these Na'arim? Who are they? Are they Kohanim? Are they the sons of the Kohanim? We don't know. But the people who are engaging in the service of the sacrifices, in Shemot chapter 24, you can see it very clearly in Pasukei there, Vayishlach et Na'arei B'nei Israel. The most central word throughout the Akedah story is Na'arim. He goes with Shnei Na'aravimo. The Na'ar goes with him. Al Tishlach Yadcha El Hanar. Suddenly Na'arim. So, what we're saying is, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts together Shemot Perek Chaf Dalet, and he writes Perek Chaf Dalet, why did he use so many motifs, so much of the vocabulary of the Akedah? What is the connection? Needless to say, this one is taking place on Har HaMoriah, and this one is taking place on Har Sinai. What I'd like to contend is that the connection is not just Midrashic. It is actually from the Torah itself. The Torah itself made some sort of connection. But if the Torah made some sort of connection, the question is, what is the connection? Why would we try to paint Matan Torah, or the covenant of Sinai, in the colors of the Akedah? So that's a good question. And here, I'm interested actually hearing whether anybody has a suggestion. What would it be why would you write the story of Har Sinai and have in the back of your mind, have the soundtrack of the Akedah running through your brain? What do the two have in common? Any suggestions? Okay, both turning points in history. Both significant Jewish, shall I use a bad pun, peak moments, okay? Somebody suggested that I call this sheer Twin Peaks. I don't know if you ever saw that. Twin Peaks. There was a series on TV called Twin Peaks. Peak moments of history. Okay, but is there anything that we can say which the two events have in common? Willingness to sacrifice. So I think that could be one suggestion. That of course, the story of the Akedah, one of the central ideas of the Akedah is a willingness to sacrifice. That, of course, Avram is willing to give up anything. And of course, when we're committing ourselves to Torah, the idea is, it's a total commitment. Na'aseh v'nishma, the ultimate commitment. And therefore, what we're saying is that just like Avram was willing to give everything, his future, his past, his future, his everything, his faith, for God, we are also willing to commit ourselves totally. So that is definitely a possibility, and I've heard this suggestion raised. I've got to be honest, I think I find the sacrificial aspect of the Akedah very, very difficult, and therefore I found myself not warming to that particular aspect of the story. And therefore I'd actually like to make a different suggestion. And the different suggestion is going to involve us in our last parallel. Har HaMoriah. If you take a look at the Akedah, it says, Pasuk Yud Dalet in the Akedah on the left-hand side. Pasuk Yud Dalet. Vayikra Avraham Shem HaMakom Ahu, Hashem Yira'eh. Hashem Yira'eh. Asher Amar Hayom, Bahar Hashem Yira'eh. Avram called that place, God will see. That it is said today about this mountain, Bahar Hashem Yira'eh. The idea of seeing and being seen seems to be central to the Akedah. The idea that in some way God will see. And we say on this mountain, it's a very difficult phrase. What does it mean? Asher Amer Hayom, when is Hayom? Right? Does it mean nowadays that we say Bahar Hashem Yira'eh, God will be seen on the mountain? But there's some idea of the Moriah was, what happened at the Akedah was, a mifgash, a meeting, a interchange, a very powerful frontal experience with God. That's what took place. That's why. Avram doesn't call the mountain sacrifice. He doesn't call the mountain sun. He calls it Hashem Yira'eh. God will see. Here is a place where I can actually have a rendezvous, a meeting, a contact point with God. And that is also a similar feature. The beginning and end of the story in Shemot is also about the same thing. You will go up and you will bow down, and then it says, Vayiru et Elohei Yisrael. They saw the God of Israel. They saw the God of Israel. That is the central feature. And I actually think that this is, if you think about it, and you think about these four mountains which we've discussed, Moriah, Sinai, Carmel, and Tabor, they all involve seeing or experiencing God. Of course, at Mount Carmel was the moment where fire came down from heaven, and everybody said, Hashem hu ha'elokim, Hashem hu ha'elokim. Right? In the story of Eliyahu. Even in the story of Har Tabor, anybody remember what event took place at Har Tabor? Devorah and the Battle of Sisera. I'll tell you the way it's described. It's actually on your sheet. On the left-hand column, you see the Shoftim reference. It's described in the following way. Hashem betzeitcha miseir. God, when you came out of Seir, betzaadcha, when you strode from Seir Adom, Eretz Rasha, the land shook. Gam shamayim natafu, gam avim natfumayim, harim nazlu mipnei Hashem, ze Sinai mipnei Hashem Elohei Yisrael. It is seen as a revelation on Mount Tabor. Took place at Mount Tabor, the equivalent of Sinai. If you look at the two references above, Shemot Perek Lamed Aleph and Shemot Perek Chaf Gimel, both of these references describe the way we come for the three pilgrim festivals, the Aliyah LeRegel. Look at the way they're described. Shemot Perek Lamed Aleph, Shalosh Pamim B'Shana, Yira'eh Kol Zuchurcha Et Penei Ha'adon Hashem Elohei Yisrael. Three times a year, your menfolk will be seen. They will see the face of God. And again in Shemot Perachav Gimel, the idea of seeing God, experiencing God, having a meeting with God, is central to the experience of Aliyah LeRegel. It's not about bringing sacrifices. It's also about bringing sacrifices. But it is about being able to actually meet Hashem. See the face of God as much as God's face may be seen, to actually have some sort of living, breathing, experiential contact point with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And maybe that's exactly why Chazal wanted to connect these two mountains. One is the primary place where we had an amazing meeting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe in the most clearly depicted way, Har Sinai. And since the idea is that we are meant to actually see the face of God, we're meant to actually see and experience God at Har HaMoriah, they're connected to one, they come from the same dough. They come from the same fabric, if you understand what I mean. Now, I just would like to relate to the up and down side. And that, I think, comes from Yeshayahu. And with this, we'll have to finish. I think we're running a little bit out of time, but we'll finish with this. Yeshayahu chapter 2, you see on the right-hand column, he says, V'hayab acharit hayamim, verse 2, Nachon yehar beit Hashem, in the future times, in the time of Mashiach, the har beit Hashem will be Barosh Harim, at the top of the mountain, V'nisa migva'ot. It will be the highest mountain. Why? Because everybody will respect God. V'naharau alav kol agayim. All nations will come there. And all nations will come and they'll say, let's go to the house of Yaakov. There is a mountain which is meant to be raised, and that is Har HaBayit, Har HaMoriah. Why is it raised? Because from Sinai, because from Har HaBayit, from the temple, will come Torah. Sinai is the place where Torah was given. But Moriah is meant to be the place where it is spread. Because Moriah is the place of God's house, it has to be raised. But because Sinai is the place where we receive Torah, we are meant to have a meek or lower posture vis-a-vis God. How do I prove that? I'll just prove it from the rest of the chapter here. It says, I'm not quite sure, but if you want to read the rest of the chapter, verse 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, I'll just read from verse Pasukud Bet. Ki yom la shem tzva'ot al kol ge'eh v'ram. There is a day of God which is going to visit everybody who is proud and high. I'll call me Sabah Shafel. I'll call Arzel Vanon and all the cedars of the Lebanon, Haramim Vanisim, who are so high. I'll call Alonei Avashan and all of those big oaks of the Golan. I'll call Arim Aramim and all of those high mountains. I'll call Hagvaot Anisaot and all high hills. I'll call Migdal Gaboha. I'll call Chomav Surah. Anybody who thinks they are an impenetrable high tower. I'll call Oniot Tarshish and all the powerful boats. I'll call Tzchiyot Achemda. The Shach Gavhut Adam. And let the haughtiness, the pride of man be lowered. V'shafel, rum anashim. And let the height of man be lowered. V'nisgav Hashem levado v'yom ha'hu. There seems to be a very deep connection that Sinai and Moriah are both places we can meet God. Because Moriah is God's place. It is raised. It represents the height of God. But Sinai is a place where man has to receive Torah. And therefore it is appropriate for Sinai to be low, to be meek. Obviously in a receiving place, you cannot, if you're so full of yourself, you cannot receive. In order to be able to receive Torah, to make a commitment to Torah, that has to be low. But we can see certainly from Yeshayahu, this theme of high and low. The mountains raising, the mountains lowering. It would be a theme that the Midrash draws the metaphor from here. I guess in conclusion, what we can hope is, that, now Baruch Hashem, celebration of Yom Yerushalayim. I think on Yom Yerushalayim, 43 years ago, people did get a sense of experiencing God. It's certainly our duty to try and make sure that Yerushalayim remains a place where God may be seen. Unfortunately, sometimes in the newspapers, that is not so evident. And I think the idea of Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah, that Yerushalayim should be a place which does represent God and is seen, where God is seen through it, depends a certain amount on us seeing God as high and ourselves as humble. And if we manage to achieve that aim, if we manage to lower ourselves enough to be mekabel the Torah, then maybe indeed, as we receive the Torah, Torah will emanate from Yerushalayim. So I want to say thank you, and Yishar Koach, thank you for coming to the Shiur. And Chag Sameach.